Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Chicago Gametrepreneur Show. For our first-time listeners, we're a show all about helping indie games in Chicago, whether it's providing advice for new creators or showcasing the awesome stuff that's going on. We're really about just promoting and helping the indie community. If you want to help us out, please subscribe, rate, and review. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Chicago Gametrepreneur. And our Twitter at CGSPod. We'll be posting some great offers from our local sponsors. We have a new sponsorship with Unruled Notebooks and some excellent offers from Basecamp. Hope you enjoy the episode.
So, this is episode 25. Ooh, of the Chicago Gametrepreneur Show.
That seems like a round number.
It does seem like a really nice...
If this
was
a comic book, it would have like a hollow foil cover or something.
Nice. Yeah, we had the foil cover episode of the show. Big announcement, we're on Google Play, so...
Yeah.
All those people without iPhones, you now have the Google Play option.
You don't have to download Stitcher or whatever it was.
Wherever you were consuming FeedBurner, you now have an easier option, so... first of all, we'd like to present you with this Unruled Notebook as a gift for being on the show.
Please hold it up and look directly into the camera.
It was a joke, but thank you.
Unruled is our new sponsor. They are custom-designed notebooks for visual thinkers, great for, you know, I think it's great for game design because it's nice to be able to just draw on them and mock out UIs and stuff like that. They're also 30% recycled material, very eco-friendly. For every 3 notebooks, they plant a tree. So, and they're a local product, so like all local things, we like to support that.
Very cool.
All right, so on this episode, David Welch here to talk about Boot Hill Heroes. This is the second one, right?
Mm-hmm.
2.
Well, this game is actually called Boot Hill Bounties.
Bounties, mm-hmm. Yes.
For a long time, it was probably going to be called Boot Hill Heroes 2, but then a few years ago, we made the change that it would be called Boot Hill Bounties.
Very nice.
Only really revealed that a couple of months ago.
And then this is the second title from your studio, right?
Yeah.
And is it just you, or do you have anyone working with you right now?
It's just me. I do everything except for any audio stuff.
So very cool.
The sound effects and... soundtrack is all outsourced.
Very nice.
To whom?
The sound effects are done by a nice gentleman in
Budapest.
What's that country? Brazil, I think.
Okay.
Sorry with the
Raphael.
I felt it.
I think of Brazil, I think of Portuguese and Brazil, and I just start to get crossed in my head.
Well, that's what they speak.
Yeah.
So you're requesting the translations in Brazilian and they come back in Portuguese? Well, no, they do speak Portuguese.
That's why
I'm confused now. I'm confused
because
now.
They have different dialects of Portuguese, though, from what I understand. Like, Portuguese people look down their nose at Brazilian dialect.
Yeah, that's fair.
So let's talk about the first Boot Hill Heroes for a second.
Hang on, I wanted to mention the other guys. The composer is Jay Kaufman, who did the music for Shovel Knight.
Oh, very nice.
A ton of other stuff. DuckTales Remastered, Mighty Switch Force, I think, and what else? Blood Rain Betrayal. Contra 4.
Whoa.
Double Dragon Neon.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
So this is the dream, right? You got your SNES composer to do the music for your game.
Yep. It's all coming together.
Very nice. So quickly, to go over like the history of the franchise, if you will, right? The first Boot Hill Heroes, you did a Kickstarter, 2012 now?
Yeah.
And really, like, I was shocked you knocked it out of the park, right? Almost 18K out of your 5K goal?
Yeah. Yeah, we're pretty happy with how it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kickstarter was mostly, I mean, it sort of all became different things, but like the primary goal of it was to get a good composer, so it worked out.
There you go. So, you know, we do a lot of kind of dives into Kickstarters and, you know, what makes them successful. Any tips or anything you learned during your Kickstarter? I mean, you did great, so.
It was so long ago, though, so I would say, like, if you want to have a
cast
successful...
Cast your mind back.
Yeah, if you want to have a successful Kickstarter, you need to be on the one Kickstarter is very early. Build a time machine.
So you can get that time machine and...
No, but I'm sure it's changed so much. I don't know what would make a successful Kickstarter. It's been... I've done a
Kickstarter before.
I would say just be careful what you make promises for, because I promised some really crazy stuff and I had to put out some really big apologies.
Like what?
A cake.
Oh.
For every backer?
Yeah. $2, no. It was like $150 got you like a cake.
Okay.
And it turns out, like, I could not find a way to ship a cake. You think there's really like something like
well, the cake leaves you a lot of flexibility, right? You
so can... the cake was a lie?
All right. Rim shot.
For the purposes of that joke, I'd say yes.
But, like, yeah, I feel like you should be able to ship someone a Twinkie and call it a cake, right?
Like, it got to the point where, like, we would find out where they lived and call bakeries locally.
Oh, boy, that...
Like,
that
is there, like, a local bakery? I say we because, like, back then I had a partner who was with us for a few months and then kind of...
Drifted out.
Well, he kind of went to the background of the project and now he's just, like, kind of a tester and enthusiast. But that's why I say we. It's sort of a habit now. But anyway, yes, the cake thing.
It was the royal we.
Engaging on the great cake hunting expedition.
Yeah.
The Dave Welch will speak to you now.
So, got the Kickstarter. Successful release on Steam. Reviews looking very positive. Also, DLC. That was very cool.
Yeah.
How did that perform in terms of DLC compared to the original product?
Oh, you mean sales?
Yeah.
Oh, not very good. DLC was like $1. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know, it was on sale a lot, so it's like 50 cents.
Do you know what percentage of people who bought the game bought the DLC?
That's a great question.
Because I think you're the first person that we've had on that's actually gotten to like a DLC stage.
Oh.
Okay, we've had people in here doing multiple Kickstarters, different titles, but I don't know if anyone's done DLC.
The horses have done free DLC.
That's true, but we haven't had the horses on yet.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah.
So actually, what happened was Sony wanted the game on PlayStation Mobile.
Okay.
And they talked us into, like, let's have DLC for it, or not DLC for them, but just, like, something extra for it. Like, okay, great. So... That's what the idea was, like, okay, let's think of something extra we can put in the game to make it, this version of it, different. And so we did, and eventually it came to the other versions as well.
Yeah. So you bundled it in the Sony version, and then you pulled it out as DLC for the Steam stuff, right?
Right.
Very cool. All right, so we should have started with this, but let's talk about, like, the concept of the game and how it plays and stuff like that.
It's a Western RPG.
We do a lot of business stuff, so we get really excited about the business things.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's a Western RPG. I like to say Wild West, because when people say Western RPG, they think, oh, like Skyrim versus Final Fantasy.
Oh,
yeah. No, not that kind of Western. Like a Wild Western.
Mm-hmm. Spaghetti Western.
Yeah, Spaghetti Western. Actually, yeah. That's
not so violent as Spaghetti Westerns. Like, spaghetti westerns are like the like jaded, cynical version of a western.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, yeah, I don't know. Your Boot Hill Hero seems more like a John Wayne western.
I don't know. It sort of got mixes and pieces of all over things. And even outside the genre a little bit. I think spaghetti western is like specifically like Italian made westerns, so they seem to have their own like kind of style with like the Dollars trilogy and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And also four person co-op. How does that work? I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I'm curious how that works, especially in the JRPG.
Yeah,
style.
It started with like a simple idea. So one of my favorite games is Final Fantasy 3/6, of course. But a lot of people don't know that game is actually multiplayer.
Oh,
I have no idea. And it works really simply. All you do is you just go to the options menu and you assign a controller to different characters. So when their turn comes up in battle, you can choose the other controller, it chooses the commands for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it does. So it's pretty bare bones multiplayer. But it's still fun because it's just a fun game. So the idea is, like, how can we take an idea like that where there's no reason any RPG shouldn't at least have that kind of functionality.
Right.
It's pretty simple. But then how can we make it more fun? How can we make it sort of designed for co-op? And so it's not like you're waiting for your turn, like waiting for like your battle gauge to fill up so that you can finally do something.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of goal is how the combat system evolved.
Okay.
Just thinking with that in mind. And then it sort of created a combat system which is also really fun single player because
mm-hmm.
it's all active time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so go into that. How does that mechanic work?
Sure. So, it's still command-based, but everything happens in real time. So,
mm-hmm.
you have different actions you can do. They're called banjes, and they have different power costs from, like, 1 to 10. And you have an overall power gauge that fills up.
Okay.
So, you can select an action, and if you have enough power, you'll do the action. If not, then you'll just be in, like, a queued charge state, and it'll discharge, and then when it's full, it'll automatically do the action. So, when you're controlling up to four characters, you can just kind of like cue them up or take their action and then let them go, and then
mm-hmm.
just constantly go back and forth between your characters and either cancel action or pick a new action or just change it anytime
mm-hmm.
you want. So everything's happening kind of it's still command based, but it's kind of, I don't know, faster. It's all happening in real time. And what the strategy comes in, because like everything's really focused on timing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what actions can I do for them? You can do their actions, and should I change my actions, or what's the best move right here during this window of time?
Mm-hmm.
So
do the enemies react in real time then too?
Yeah, they also choose different
mm-hmm.
attacks and have their own power gauge that fills up. So, and you can actually see it, so you know when an enemy is going to attack.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you can try and damage cancel them. Or
you
whatever.
Can get a dodge ready, you can make sure you're healed, you can cancel their action in some other way,
mm-hmm.
or just some way to prepare for it. And because they do that, you're often canceling your action. Like, okay, that was a good idea
at the time, but
4 seconds ago,
uh-huh.
but now it's like, I'll change that, do this instead. So even if you are playing co-op and you're charging an action, you're just kind of waiting, things can change at any moment, so you're still engaged in what's
right.
going on.
Mm-hmm. I like it. It's very like D&D, right? Where you have a character and you're trying to react. Although that's completely turn-based, but
it reminds me of classic, FF7, or like recently Child of Light has an active time thing.
Mm-hmm.
Although time pauses at like critical moments, so you can do the menuing in your own time.
Well, the difference between this and like regular active time is when your active time bar fills up, you then take an action. Here you can take several actions that each take a different amount
mm-hmm.
of time. So you select that ahead of time and then wait till that fills up. So your turn sort of is always happening.
Right.
Either you're,
you decide sort of.
Yeah.
How long your turn is going to take to perform.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
So, as we mentioned at the beginning, you're now close to releasing the second version, Boot Hill Bounties. Anything changed in that combat system since the first game?
Not fundamentally, no. It's
mm-hmm.
it's basically the same idea. I just think it probably expanded on with like just tons of more advantages and moves
mm-hmm.
and things
mm-hmm.
you can do, and things that kind of mix up the formula, different kinds of actions you can do. For example, like there's like a regular stance you can use called dodge, where you just try to evade attacks that come your way, and
mm-hmm.
but then there's like different ways that you have different kinds of dodges. Like you learn a duck, which is actually more effective when it's used early, so
okay.
the attacks that come right after you use a duck are more likely to be evaded than other attacks when it's starting to wear off.
Mm-hmm.
So that involves like a timing part of it. There's one, I don't remember what it's called, but it gets better every time it's used.
Okay.
Every
yes.
time it
mm-hmm.
succeeds. So, like, if you use
it. So, does it start, like, very low power? And
Yeah, yeah. And it's just during your character's run, that battle. So, like, if it doesn't work quite well at first, then it starts to get better. So there's different ways of kind of mixing it up and turning things on their head like that.
How about the RPG aspects? There was, I assume there's kind of a long storyline over the first game, and then is this the same story carried in the second one, or are we starting with new characters? Or
it is. It continues the story, but I like to let people know, like, if you want to jump in on this one, then you'll be okay with that.
Catch up.
Yeah, there's a pretty, I think it's a pretty good sequence at the beginning that kind of catches you up on what happened so far, who the characters are, and what's going on. I mean, the first game was, it wasn't a super long game, but a lot of stuff happened, but the gist of what happened, where you need to know, is pretty easy to sum up.
You get caught up fast.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Does it use the game saves from the first game? Or no?
It does, or you can just start a new game and characters start on, like, level 10.
Very cool. Permadeath, yes or no?
No.
Okay, all right.
This is probably the least permadeath game ever, because even if you... Because usually in RPG, if you, like, die in battle, like, I call it, like, knockout, you gotta use, like, an item, or go to a healer, or pray to a god, or something.
Yeah.
This one, you don't have to do anything. You just auto-revive.
Okay.
You don't even need another character to auto-revive you, so, like...
That's great.
Yeah. So, you, like, they'll do, like, a countdown where, like, it counts down from, like, 10 to 1, then you're back to 1, your character just pops back up.
Mm-hmm.
So you just don't want to have everybody knocked out at once, and then that's how you lose.
Do you feel that kind of thing is made more accessible to a larger audience? Instead of being, like, super punishing, like Fire Emblem or something like that?
Well, it's still punishing in other ways, but because in this game, it's not sort of a resource RPG, where a lot of RPGs are about going through a dungeon and you fight all these battles that sort of dwindle away your resources, your items, your magic points. Mm-hmm. This doesn't have those kinds of items. It doesn't have magic points. It just has your attacks and the constantly refilling power gauge.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no, like, item that brings you back to life.
Got it.
And there's no items used at all in combat. There kind of is, so don't be completely wrong, but mostly combat is focused on different actions you do rather than items.
Then carefully, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hoarding.
Yeah.
Finishing the game with, like, 100,000 minor potions.
Right.
Don't need to do that.
Although something can happen, like, if you do get knocked out in combat, you will revive, but you'll have, like, a permanent wound, like a broken arm or a gunshot.
I saw that, yeah, there's, like, a wound system, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I just posted about that. And then that, you need, like, an item or a doctor or someone to heal. So that is kind of, like...
So that kind of adds to the flavor, right? You have this party of people, and they all have, like, gunshots and broken arms and missing teeth.
It's
and
perfect for the theme.
Yeah, it's
like
great.
The Old West, like, medical help is...
Like, I'll pour some whiskey on it.
Yes.
It'll be fine.
But, yeah, I actually had to research, like, all these old-timey cures for things. Like, crazy medicine shows. And, like, all the ones in the game are, like, based on real ones, or they are not. They're based on things that actually were written about would cure you, but they were all, like, hoaxes and things. So, if the game were realistic, like, you can't, like, cure stuff instantly. And this guy cures for things that don't exist yet, right now.
Right.
But they're all, like weird toxins and things like that. I had a lot of fun, like, researching and coming up with those.
Snake oil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you find your audience is more people that, like, grew up with NES JRPGs or people that just enjoy the setting and enjoy the Western aspect of it?
I think it's both. I definitely get kind of an older audience. Of
okay.
People that didn't grow up playing RPGs like I did that are interested in something like this.
Mm-hmm. So going back to that, how did you get started? How did you kind of, like, and you're a one-man indie studio, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do it full-time? Anything else on the side? Or
I was doing it full-time for about, how many years has it been? 5 or 6 years.
That's awesome.
But now I'm just doing it part-time for the last few months.
Very cool. Well, I mean, you're almost to another release, so.
Yeah.
It's very impressive. Any tips for someone doing the one-man indie studio?
Yeah, start small. Mm-hmm. Don't do what I did. Don't make a five-year game. Like, making indie games is not, you know, maybe the most lucrative job to begin with, but if you are going to do it, don't make one that takes 5 years. Make one that takes a week, or at least you think takes a week.
Right.
It'll take you 6 months, but still, that's not nearly as long. So I would say start small, and then when you think you can't start any smaller, do about 10% of that and make that game. Or if you just cannot be talked out of making your dream game, what I would do is find like a part of that dream game, like a system in it, like, I don't know, maybe it has like a card trading mini game in it. Make that. Make that a different game and make that separately, and then once that's done, you have a game made and you have a piece of your dream game finished.
Yep.
So that way you're doing both.
I mean, I think I've been working on a game for, I think, 4 years, and
same.
Rob's similar, so yeah, I think we'd say the same thing. It's like, and that's the part of the risk with Kickstarter, is it does lock you into this kind of big overarching project, so.
Yeah, well, this one was never supposed to be this big, and it just, I let it get kind of out of hand, and the scope creeped its way into this big. It was supposed to be, like, kind of what I described, where I wanted to make something really small and then kind of expand on it through iterative future games.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then, like, by, like, the 10th game, it would be something massive, but instead I just jumped to number 10.
Well, I mean, it seems like you're doing okay with it, so. Probably not on the timeline for you.
Yeah. Well, it does exist. Like, for a long time, like, I kind of went on, like, a media blackout. Not that there was a ton of media anyway, but just didn't talk about it at all online or with anybody. If anybody, I mean, like, the backers knew, like, it's that I would, if they asked me, that yes, it's being worked on. But it went so long that when I came back, but like a couple of months ago, and said, oh, I'm almost done. They're like, what? This game still exists. We have all moved on. Most of us have died of old age or started families.
That's amazing. Cause almost everyone who speaks to me starts their greeting with, how's Codemancer? And then they're like, how are you? And, you know.
We can't distinguish you from the game anymore.
Well, because I got that first game out, people were
they
just
had
like,
more confidence.
Yeah, it's like, all right, so something exists. Even if the rest of it doesn't ever materialize, at least something, we got something out of this. And,
right.
But surprise, the rest of it did come years later.
That's great.
So, going back to you said you had that long blackout. It seems like you're in a media period, marketing period right now. What are you doing?
Everything I can think of. Uh-huh. It includes asking people what I should be doing and just getting their advice, because I'm not... not very media savvy. I didn't have to like make a Twitter account. No, I wasn't
going on tiny little podcasts.
Yeah, podcast designed to promote indie designers in the place where you live.
Anything. So the thing I'm doing, I'm doing the what I call the Corral Countdown, where I'm counting down the days until release, and every day I'm posting something interesting about the game, because there's like. Lots of stuff in this game that I want to tell people about, and it's kind of the frustration where people, well, if I had to like pitch the game, like, what's this game about and why is it so great, like I can't fit everything in that. This is like, there's not like any one amazing hook that I want to give. There's like all these tiny things I want to say, so I'm just every day I'm revealing something new.
That's great, actually. I mean, that's a good way to kind of draw people in on a consistent basis. I mean, consistency is my problem. I'm never good about, like, keeping up with posting stuff. So
same.
I think it's a great mechanic that you said, I'm going to make myself write something every day about the game.
Yeah, well, what I did, I know how you feel, because, like, that's kind of what I went on that blackout, because I knew, like, I don't know when this game's going to be done. I keep saying it's going to be done next month, and I say that for years and years. So I'm just not going to say anything at all, because once, I feel like... creating buzz for your game or hype is like building and maintaining a fire. So you gotta like light it, and you gotta blow on it, you gotta make sure it doesn't go out, and you gotta keep feeding it or else it'll go out. You can't like start a fire and then feed it and it goes up and then you're like distracted and it goes completely out and your effort was totally wasted.
Yeah.
Right.
So it makes sense to not even touch the fire, to stay away from the fire at all until you're ready to make that big fire. So that's kind of what I did, is I said, all right, now I'm definitely ready, and now I'll do everything I can to create as much noise as possible.
Yeah, so now that you're here, you've been doing this Corral Countdowns. Is there one that you would like to share on the pod?
My favorite one was the one revealed on Wednesday, which was the newspaper.
Okay,
I'm really excited
that.
About the in-game newspaper, because I feel like even people who saw the post probably didn't really realize how cool it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm really happy about it, because what it is it's I don't know if any other game does this, but the game has like tons of like side quests and recipes to learn and side jobs and special things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And like, how do you keep track of all that? To like a boring quest management table? No. You just read the newspaper and you read it, and then the newspaper has like, it comes out like in each phase of the game, and
okay.
it talks about like what just happened in the game. It's like your actions affect the story. So it's like, oh, it talks about like news stories about from the perspective of the people, like here's what's happening. And then like it has like classified jobs, and it has advertisements and coupons and all these things that kind of tie all the other miscellaneous things together in one place. So
that's a brilliant mechanism. I really like the flavor of it plus the utility of it. Right. That's a
yeah.
great combination.
Yeah, and I think what I really like about it is the thing that I want that's hard to really get across. But what I really like about the game is that it's just jam packed with like Easter eggs and detail.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like 300 or so NPCs, a lot of special names, and they all like
are always doing something.
They're always doing they're doing something. They're very rarely just one who just says one thing and never says anything else. They're all sort of have their own role in the world, and like I'll constantly like reference them in different places.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, like in the newspaper, it'll be like a story about something that happened. There'll be like a quote by somebody. And, like, there's no way the player's going to keep track of all these people because they're all extremely, not all of them, but there's, like, tons of minor characters. But it's just another way to, like, remind the player this is, like, a...
Like, you could go see that guy who had the quote in the paper and, like...
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, really, really
it
tied
like
together
the
whole game environment and the world and the world building. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the newspaper just provides, like, a ton of opportunities to do that through, like, not just the news stories, but, like, the advertisements... things like that.
Yeah, I think it's great that it's functional, right? Because, like, I think about System Shock, and, like, you listen to those audio diaries, and sometimes they'd have, like, a code or something in them, but really, like, they're completely, like, non-functional with the game, right? They're specifically there for ambience, but I like it when a designer's smart enough to put something in that adds ambience, but is also part of the function.
Yeah, and, like, even your characters who, like, comment on the news stories, like, oh, that's sounds interesting. Let's go check that out.
Oh,
like they'll have
cool.
like a side quest. Like, oh, this isn't related to what we're doing, but let's go check out this. Someone said they saw a ghost in this other town. Let's go check that out.
Yeah.
Very
something
nice.
Like that.
So, is it game designed to be kind of something where I go through and I consume all the content at once, or something I go and I play the game three times and I find something new every time?
You could do it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So like. Playing it again, like, there's, like, a percentage, this is someone didn't reveal yet, but, like, it'll keep track of everything you did, and, like, at the end of the game, you're, like, game percentage, completion percentage, so that players know, like, if there's more stuff to explore that they missed.
Mm.
Very cool.
So, we're at the time where we should probably go into our repeating segment.
Yes, and we're bringing back a repeating segment that we did and it was great and we forgot about it and I don't know why, but this is called the speed round. And the way it works, I'll ask you a quick question, just first thing that comes to mind. The twist of this is you can flip it back to us. So if you don't have an answer or question, you can always say flip and one of us will have to answer it.
Okay. So just answer as quickly as I can?
Yeah, first thing you have to know. So this is speed round. We'll start with an easy one. GIF or JIF?
GIF.
Excellent.
This is the sound of a high five to our listeners.
Space or tabs?
Tabs.
Yes. Two for two.
Just right answers.
Cups of coffee consumed per day while coding?
Zero. I don't drink coffee.
All right.
But I do.
Me
take,
neither.
I do take caffeine.
Preferred method
in
of ingestion?
Pills. Yeah.
Music. Is there anything you like to listen to while you code?
I listen to a lot of game soundtracks.
Oh, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Any game in particular?
This is a really great indie game I love called The Last Door. It's like a horror game. It has an amazing soundtrack. And I gotta hunt down the composer because I checked his like experience once and it didn't seem like he worked on much else.
Huh.
Like,
yeah.
It's really good.
one-hit indie soundtrack wonder. game that you're most ashamed of your game debt. So, game that you've been meaning to play for a long time that you haven't gotten around to.
Oh. I really want to answer this, but I don't know if I can answer it quickly. I'm going to flip it.
Ico.
Yeah. I think Papers, Please is mine, because I've heard so many good things about it. I think it's just sitting in my Steam library. I feel bad about it, because it's like one of those games you play and like you learn something about yourself, and I haven't. I haven't learned anything about myself.
Who would want that?
I got an answer. Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
I haven't touched it.
That's a big game, though, right?
That's why.
Yep. It's a curse of being a game designer. You're like, I love this game, but then I wouldn't work on my game for a month. game that you would have on a desert island. And we did define this desert island, for some reason, has a high-speed internet connection that you can...
So it can be multiplayer.
Yeah.
But not couch co-op. There's nobody else there.
Yeah. Probably Left 4 Dead 2. Mm-hmm. I play that, at least not so much anymore, but I used to play it a lot, and just didn't get boring, so I'm thinking of a game that wouldn't get boring.
It's interesting. A lot of people, well, I think when we had Benedict on here, he answered, like, Counter-Strike, but it seems like people go to, like, games that aren't as new, games that you kind of know have sustained power over time, so... Mm-hmm.
That a really long game like Breath of the Wild again.
There you go. Two for one. So our next section is called The What We're, and it's just as creators, we're inspired by different things. We're always interested in what inspires you and what you're consuming that you find is interesting or is helping you, come up with fun ideas. So you can go now or you can have one of us kick it off.
Just what inspires me?
Well, something you've been consuming recently.
Recently.
So, movie, TV, book,
game.
Of course.
Graffiti.
I can get it kicked off. So, I'd like to talk about two things. One is Game Maker's Toolkit, which is a YouTube series that I found very educational. Mark Brown, yeah. And it's actually like, it's been enlightening enough that I've actually made some changes in my game based off what I'm learning there, so I recommend it for game makers because it's a good
it's their toolkit,
if you will. The other thing I want to recommend is a game about making paperclips. It's on. I'll post the link, but it's a game about making paperclips, but it's awesome because it's a game about making paperclips, but also a commentary on the dangers of artificial intelligence and scale and resource consumption. And it's maybe an 8-hour game, but when you get to the end of the game, you look back and it feels like you've like passed through several millennia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it like, I don't know, you told me that it's like browser-based.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like an idle game where there's things happening?
So it's kind of idle. It's kind of an idle game, but not really. There are some times where you'll just kind of watch, but most of it requires active decision making.
Interesting.
I think people get confused by it because they think it's an idle game, but once you start playing it, you realize that you actually do have a lot of decisions to make almost all the time. So I would definitely recommend taking a look, and it's you can play it on your browser, and it probably takes 8 hours total. So,
great. That's one work day blown.
Mm-hmm. Just set it on fire and never get it back.
Oh gosh, I still don't have a good answer. I've just been...
That's okay. You've been frittering away your time listening to Kiwan. Mistake. Mistake that all of you in the audience are repeating. Let's see, I just finished a book called Faith that is not about faith. Faith is the name of the spaceship.
Ah, bearing the lead.
It's about, like, psychos who are put in charge of, like, the most powerful spaceship so that they can fight this unknowable, invincible spaceship called Faith.
Huh.
And everyone hates these psychos, and this class of ships is called Outsiders because they're just like people that no one wants to associate with, but they're very talented, but also like have violence or, you know, terrible things in their past.
This kind of feels like reverse Firefly from the Reaver's perspective.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Is it a new book?
New-ish. I just got it at a used bookstore randomly.
Huh.
Yeah.
You did the mystery, like, reach in the bin and pull a book out.
Well, I always gravitate to the genre section, fantasy, sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, I combed the entire place, and that was among the best things in there.
I think it's fun to go into, like, less curated experiences. Like, going to a movie theater and watching a movie without watching the trailer. Right.
Yeah.
Because, like, we curate almost everything we do now, and occasionally... That's why Paperclips is really fun for me, because it's not like
nobody
I...
Nobody told you.
Yeah, I didn't watch the review on Paperclips before I played it. I was like, what is this?
No, well, we've ruined it for all of us.
That's
okay.
That's true. I'll take out the Men in Black thing and just... You can enjoy Paperclips.
I mean, I guess we could edit this part out, but that's not going to happen.
That's true. Just just white noise. And then
and that's why Paperclips is good.
Anything for you writing
now? The truth is, like, I just haven't been doing anything but working on this stuff.
Mm,
yeah. Other job, and then I'm working on the game. I haven't really been experiencing.
Listening to music while you work?
Yes. Listening to the soundtrack to The Last Door. Also a lot of OC remix of, like, RPGs. Like, the Secret of Mana OC remix playlist is really good. So any music recommendations?
What does OC stand for in this context?
Overclocked Remix.
Oh.
They do, like, video game remixes. So, like, it's like a new way of hearing the same video
game
music.
Yeah. Very cool.
And so I listen to, like, OC remix RPG soundtracks or other game soundtracks and stuff like that.
Very nice. So what's the schedule look like for your release then?
Well, it's coming out December 1st one way or another.
You're already locked in with the countdown, right?
So. Yeah. It's like a countdown. Like,
yeah.
You can't change it now.
It's the final countdown.
So, I still need to get a trailer out.
Okay.
I'm working on that. There's no trailer, so hopefully that'll be out in a couple more weeks. There's been a lot of playtesting. I'm still looking for playtesters, so if anybody watching this wants to be a playtester, that's good, because there's like a ton of variables to, like, kind of account for, and still many bugs.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Lots of bugs of things coming together.
And then what platforms?
So just on Steam for now.
Okay, so on Steam, December 1st.
Everyone always asks me, like, is it coming to Switch? Any plans for Switch or anything else? And it's like, well, I don't know who would say, like, never. No.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, I would love for it to be on the main platforms as
well. Well, you've sat in the chair in this podcast studio, and we've had two of our guests go on the Switch.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's not impossible.
Yeah, so now that you have the luck of the chair... I think it's almost guaranteed at some point that it happens, right?
Yeah, I would love for...
We are the Kingmakers!
But other people... So my answer is, like, I will definitely try, but I can't guarantee.
Yeah.
And the first one was on PlayStation...
PlayStation Mobile, and also Xbox Live Indie Games. So, and because it uses the same engine, it works with Mono Game, and it's been ported before, so I... Porting's not like a fun thing to look at, so I don't think too much about it.
But right, you're not thinking about that right now.
Yeah, especially now. But once the game is finished,
distant nightmare.
I'll definitely think about possibilities there.
Very cool. Alright, and then if we wanted to follow development and follow you, your info,